Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Charlie McFadden. He's the author of quite a number of books, and there is one in particular called Conversations with the Light Being that we will be discussing today. So, welcome to the program, Charlie.
Thank you, Mike. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm pleased to say we can hear you very clear, which is very nice. Now, I see you have quite a long list of books between yourself and your partner, Daniela. Am I to think that you were writing some of these prior to your contact with the light being that you refer to called Red, following which, of course, you wrote the book that we're going to discuss now? So were you already into these sort of things before that particular experience?
Oh, yes. I've been doing yoga, acupuncture, and meditation for about 15 years now, maybe even more at this point. But so I've been into this type of thing, and we're very open-minded and very open to metaphysical topics. We didn't expect to really stumble into the book Conversations with a Light Being. And actually, the funny thing is you are in one of our books. I'm not sure if you remember, but we put a compilation of spiritual teachers together. It was called 2012, The Good News. Mm-hmm. And we asked you for a little article or a little blurb that you'd like to talk about 2012 and the good news, the good spin on it. And you actually supplied us. And so we thank you for that. I'm not sure, like I said, if you remember or...
Well, sort of vaguely, I wouldn't have placed it with yourself unless you mentioned it. Oh, well, that's it. That's interesting to know. Fine. Yeah. So we'll concentrate on the book and the story around it. And I know our listeners will be very interested to know how you came into contact with the light being. And I'll just tell them that you used to go to a meditation group where there was a lady who you will call Betty, who I suppose it would be true to say introduced you to Red, and it took off from there. So tell us the story around that contact.
Yes, that's correct. We were just in a meditation group, and the woman just started talking to us about her experiences because she figured we were okay with that type of information, and we were. And then we asked her eventually if – well, we actually spoke to the being probably for – I'm just guessing I really have very bad with time, but I would say half year to a year before we even decided to say, hey, how about you giving a message to humanity? Because we would basically take questions from people and ask these different questions of the being. And he would answer them the best he could. Sometimes he didn't know the answers. He seemed to be very, very much like just a normal kind of guy. You know, if you could, can say that, very much higher than we are. He said he's on the 15th dimension, where we're on the third dimension. So he's much higher in vibration. But so anyway, we were asking him questions that people would supply us, and eventually, you know, we ran out of questions because what more can you finally ask? And then we finally asked him, "Can you give a message to humanity? Like, if you had to say something to humanity, can you tell us and can we write a book about it?" And he said that it would be very good to do that. And that's kind of how we came about the book.
Right, right. So is Red actually on his own level a being of pure light? I mean, do you know that?
Well, actually, what he appears to be is actually just a normal-looking being. He just explains himself to be on the 15th dimension. So I'm not sure if he's appearing to us as we... I mean, he's not... I've never seen him, so I don't want to mislead people. We feel a presence. I mean, when you meditate, you become sensitive, and I think you can kind of sense things. And me and my partner definitely would sense a different environment. And I actually can tell you, recently we did a little test. It's kind of interesting. I could tell you about. But anyway... The way Betty told us that he looked, he basically looks like a tall man who's red. And he just wanted to go. She asked him, "What was your name?" And basically he said, "Just call me Red Man." yeah, so that he looked like a man. And And we kind of use the term light being just because we didn't know how else to really describe him.
Right. Did he actually tell you the name of the planet he came through or the constellation that it's in?
No, we never really asked. We're more into, I'm not sure if you'd say meditative type questions or whatever. We weren't really interested in where he was from or anything like that. And sometimes I think one time we did ask something along those lines because we got questions from other people. And from what I remember, he basically said that he couldn't really explain where he is from because it's a different dimension than ours. But he basically travels through portals in order to get here. And that's kind of how he explained where he was from. But he never really – and it's kind of funny because he had a partner, Krill. And she was much more talkative and much more – like some people would ask about conspiracy theories. And he would never really answer that stuff. He would say it's nothing to be – you're concerned with. Your concern is to basically help yourselves improve. If your government's doing something bad, that is not your concern. Where she would actually try to give some of the information that people would ask. And she would actually look into topics where he would just say, meh. It's not important.
Right. Now, I gather you were quite impressed because you were given a number of predictions. I wouldn't ask you about the personal side of it, but what sort of prediction did he give you that applied globally that actually came true?
Well, there was one, the volcano in Iceland. We were told 3 days before it happened. And sure enough, 3 days later it happened and it was like, wow, that's kind of wild. it was scary. And at this point, I would go along with his lines of thought and say that it's not really important. The prophecy is not really important. What we've experienced in our lives, the prophecy, it really scared us. And actually we separated ourselves from this, and from him for a while. We actually took a long break and stopped asking questions. And then we finally came back. We said, well, how about you tell us, your message? So it really shook us up. I mean, we couldn't deny that these things were correct. And then also some things didn't happen. And he said, basically they happened on a different dimension. So where basically the way he explained it was, say he made a prediction, this one prediction that did not come true. And, we said, hey, what happened? And he basically explained it to us like this. He said that it happened. You made it through on a different level where there are people still – it's like a split realm where people are here and in that other dimension, and they're not really fully awake in our dimension yet. That's the way he explained it.
Right. So they experienced it, but from your aspect, it didn't take place.
Absolutely right. And he said that those people still, because we said, well, this was supposed to be something very major and actually lose a lot of population. And we said, well, what happened? And the way he explained it was that they're still here, yet they're not quite woken up into this dimension. And whether they will or not is still to be seen. But again, he kind of, and I would go along with his thought process as well, or his non-thought process of that's not important. So I kind of agree. I just say, all right.
well, it is said that we create our own reality, so I suppose that's really what he's saying. They've created some different experience for themselves, so that's it. Now, I was interested to read that in the presence of this energy, when it came through Betty, that it seemed to be so powerful that it had some effect on you.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one time we were driving home from the experience and we were driving and we realized that we were close to home and we went through, a stop sign. And we're wondering, did we actually drive through a stop sign or did we stop? We don't remember that. It was almost like a missing time chunk. And then when we went back the next time, we said, hey, what is going on? And he said, basically he was kind of watching what we were doing through us in some way. That's kind of the way he explained it. So I guess the more we got used to that, being in that presence of that, I guess, higher vibration, for lack of better words, the more, I guess, grounded we would get into it. But yeah, before we were used to it, it would shake us up physically. We'd sleep a lot, eat a lot. Yeah, it was definitely strange.
Hmm. And I was also quite interested in the fact that you said sometimes you didn't even know what conversations you'd had with Red.
Yeah, a lot of times we'd listen back to the recordings and still think, wow, you know, it was, I guess, we would take notes and we'd ask the questions. But yeah, a lot of times we'd be there for an hour or two and time would just pass by very quickly. And yeah, sometimes you just didn't remember anything. And then, you know, you listen back to the recording and hear it all kind of fresh. And when we wrote the book, we recorded everything and then we kind of transcribed it. And as we were transcribing it, a lot of time, that same energy would kind of pop up. And it was actually kind of a hard thing to do, to actually put the book on to the computer. And actually thinking about it, I'm almost having flashbacks of it. It seemed to kind of scramble your brain. And you know, and that's the point of one of his main points is that we have very dirty cells, and he talks about cellular memory. Mm-hmm. And basically, you want to get rid of all your cellular memory and have a very clean cell. And he said our disease and our belief systems and our thought patterns all come from cellular memory. So I think maybe the book, and definitely being with him, has that sense of it's taking away your cellular memory. So you kind of you can almost feel that vibration of or lack of vibration. So you're in your presence as opposed to having all these thought systems and energies that we're kind of used to being in.
Yes, I suppose you could term that as we have lower levels of consciousness. The higher beings have obviously a much higher level, and you notice that difference in the quality, I would say, of the different energies, and it affects you when you're in the presence of someone with a high energy.
Absolutely. And that's what he would say also too, is you know, you're never going to really change someone most of the time by speaking to them, or if someone's asking you for help, you're never really going to be able to help that person in so much of a way. But he said basically being the role model and being within your presence and not having all the cellular memory or the baggage, that is enough to be that role model to where you are helping. So like you're saying, being in the presence of a higher vibrating being, they don't have the type of 3D baggage that we have.
Yes. And I think the final observation I make regarding Red is you said he speaks very fast and sometimes in a strange way. Did you mean that the tone of voice or the way he used our language?
It was the way he used our language, and he would come through speaking very quickly. So we'd listen to the recordings and we'd write them down. And we tried to kind of make it more coherent. So we did change some of it, but we kept it mostly the way he kind of spoke. We did have to kind of switch around some things because it was, I can't even explain it. It was very odd. yeah, it's very, very strange.
Well, you had to make it, shall we say, understandable, didn't you?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It was understandable what he was saying, but yet the way he was saying it, it was definitely worded oddly. We were familiar with A Course in Miracles, and I think that's similar to where it's worded kind of oddly. You just can't put your finger on it, but something, I mean, it's just written, not your typical writing. It was similar to that, but it didn't sound anything like that. I guess that's the best way I could describe it.
Well, having read some of the book, Course of Miracles, I can understand entirely what you mean, because I found sometimes I had to read a sentence a few times to really get the understanding of it.
Yeah, and I think it seems almost like kind of tries to undermine the ego. You read it and it's like, wait, what? Or you hear it and it's like something in you understands it, but it's like something in you, there's a red flag that goes up, I think. And I think eventually those red flags drop away and eventually it becomes more of a smoother read. I know that's the way it was for me with the course and maybe with conversations with a light being as well. But yeah, it's interesting how that language can even be a possible, I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for, but maybe a possible little thing to help you wake up.
Hmm. Well, anyway, the main point was he obviously transmitted a lot of spiritual knowledge to you. You said he was friendly and he also had a certain sense of humor. Was most of his answers really on a sort of higher spiritual level? Was he more concerned with that aspect of our life than anything else?
Yes. Yeah, he was definitely more along the lines of, basically, he would hang out, and it was almost like, and he would even say, which was kind of funny, because we didn't have many of our own questions that we really wanted answered, and that's why we asked other people, you know, do you have questions you want answered? And he's like, aren't you guys done asking questions? And occasionally we do come up with questions, and we'll ask him, but at the same time, I understand what he's saying. Eventually, you hit a point to where it's like, there's no more really to question, you know, and he just sat back and kind of gave that to us, where it's like, come on, really? You guys are coming up with more questions? So it was kind of funny. So he was, I think, more of the higher spiritual teachings, where his partner, she would pop in and out very occasionally, very rarely, rather. And she would kind of address some of the, like I said, some of the more, if you'd say, like 3D questions or like the conspiracy theory questions, she would kind of address them, but not so much, really. We never really got deep into all that.
No. I find myself with higher spiritual beings, they really do not want to dwell on the lower negative energies. It's almost as though by talking of them, they're attracting them into their presence.
Yeah, he said that he doesn't understand a lot of the questions we'd ask. He just either didn't understand it, or he said, you know, one of the things he said even about our sports, they watch our sports as a comedy. You know, we're so competitive. He just can't understand how we can be this competitive. So yeah, I think that's correct. He just didn't really seem to be too concerned with any questions other than, you know, get yourself in order, relax. His advice would be go out in nature and exchange with nature. He would say exchange with, you know, the beings in nature. That was one of his big words, was exchange. And basically what he seemed to mean by that was to rest in the present moment, let everything clear, let yourselves become clear, and just rest. And he said that was higher than even meditation to get out in nature. But he said meditation is also very, very good and probably more practical for most people here, given, you know, our jobs and different, you know, our lifestyles.
Yes, right. Now, looking at the names of the different chapters in the book, I notice one which refers to ascension. And I guess you couldn't write a book these days on that level without referring to ascension, because so many people have the expectation of it taking place very soon. So it would be interesting to know a little bit about his views on that. Perhaps you'd like to tell us.
Sure. What he said about ascension, because we would ask him that. We'd have questions coming in, like I said, and from different people, and we'd say, ask different things about ascension. And he would say, he would always answer them when we asked him. But then when it came to the book, he said, I want to address something that you say, ascension. And he said, what I want to do is change that word to peace. And he said, you know, it seems that you guys think that someday you're going to wake up and then boom, the world has changed, you have changed, this and that. He said, that's not exactly how it works. Mostly what it is, it's an unfoldment, and you kind of unfold into peace, or you become more peaceful, and that peaceful presence becomes more of who you are. It always is who you are, but it shows more through you, because your personality is maybe dissolving, or your thought systems and beliefs are dissolving, and your cells are becoming more clear, and you're here in the present moment to where that presence can shine through. So that's kind of what he said. He said, instead of using the word ascension, he'd rather use the word peace, and he'd rather use it on an individual basis as opposed to a whole. That's kind of the direction I think he was leading with ascension. But he had the same – I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that follows in a manner of speaking, because I don't believe we can have ascension until we have established complete peace on Earth anyway.
Yeah, at the same time, he did say that we are shifting. And, you know, that pretty much things are being sorted out. And, you know, no, there's no fear behind it. There was never any fear behind anything he told us. We were afraid, like I said, by the predictions that were made and came true, just because, wow, it's something to see, and it can shake you up. I mean, it definitely shook me up. And anyway, but basically, there was never any fear on his end, and he would do his best not to be fearful or give us anything to be fearful about. But he did say, you know, we are having a shift. There are going to be many changes. So, you know.
Well, that fits in with what you said a little earlier. Ascension is invariably referred to as a process. In other words, it's an ongoing upliftment, which is why his statement is correct in saying that, in effect, you won't suddenly wake up one day and find everything's changed.
Right. Maybe things have changed on your conscious level, but you'll still look out and probably see things maybe looking very similar. And then again, you know, maybe they won't. I guess you really never know, but basically that's where he was kind of pointing toward, where it's like, this is your personal unfoldment. And it is happening, you know, on a large scale, but, you know, you're only in charge of your own unfoldment. And by doing that, you're doing your job.
Yes. Now, strangely enough, the next chapter in your book was about oneness. Now, I think that's something we are all aiming for, and that will become established after ascension. What was his view about that?
Oneness?
Yes.
He basically said that the way we see oneness is a little distorted. He said his take on oneness was, yes, ultimately everything is one. We're all coming from the same source. We're all powered by the same, say, God or source or universe, whatever you want to call it, basically. But we're all coming from the same thing. Yet in that, there are individuals. There's like individuals in the oneness, and we're all interconnected. And so by oneness, he said that he thought that humanity had a little bit of a distortion where it's like, we're all one, we're all happy, we're all, you know, no, there's no right or wrong. I mean, basically, his teachings were non-duality, yet he did kind of add a little duality into it by saying, yet you will run into, say, weird energies, maybe negative energies, angry energies, and they do exist. And they're not something you would just kind of allow to move through you if you experience them. You don't want to hold on to them. So he wasn't really saying that there was good or bad per se. He was kind of saying that there is a oneness, but it's more of an interconnected oneness. And at this point in the game, you're probably better off resting in your own peace and realizing there can be some strange vibes that come your way. But don't take it personal, and don't even fight it. You know, if something negative or anger energy comes your way, to kind of let it come your way and let it move through you, because it's not of you. So I hope that answered the question. It's hard to really explain his view on oneness.
Well, it is difficult because we often don't talk in that language, and we get stuck sometimes for the appropriate words. But I can go along entirely with what you've just said, and I guess the point is being made there that oneness doesn't mean the same, mean that we all become exactly the same. We're still very much individuals within it.
Yes, that's a good, very good way of putting it. He kind of made that clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Right now. Of late, there seems to be a lot of talk about orbs. People have actually videoed them, certainly been a lot of photographs taken. And it seems to have come up suddenly over the last few years, and one is hard put to find a lot of evidence of it earlier. So it's something of a new phenomena. Now, what does he say they are?
Basically, orbs, what he says about them, is that they're the highest form of consciousness, and they just kind of wander wherever they want to go. They can go into any dimension, out of any dimension. Basically, they have free range, apparently. And speaking of free range, one of the questions that we asked, we were talking about our animals here and how we treat our animals for food and this and that. And he said, yeah, we're not doing the best things. And there is a lot of suffering, you know, say chickens on the type of factory type of chickens that we eat, factoryized, if that's a word. And he said basically what happens is the orbs come in and they'll actually go into the chickens and take that suffering away because it's not really right for them to be in that position. So I thought that was a kind of cool thing that he said about the orbs, that they would come down and kind of take that suffering out from the chickens. He said still it's not right. They shouldn't have to do that and the chickens shouldn't be in that position. But, you know, it almost relieves, I guess. I shouldn't even say that. I would say it almost relieves the thought of that happening, but still it's not correct. But anyway, going back into the orbs, that's mainly what he said, that they're the highest form of consciousness, and they get to choose what they want to be. And apparently, if I'm not mistaken, I think he said that they could come into physical form and actually be a human, and actually enter animals, and especially those that are suffering, to kind of help ease the pain. And that's the gist of what he was saying about orbs.
Right, so he's really confirming something that people have noted, that the orbs are a level of consciousness. It makes one wonder whether they perhaps are the consciousness of elementals or some form of that nature, because I haven't heard any definition which actually indicates, say, they are souls such as inhabit our bodies when we incarnate. So did he enlarge his comments about that to any extent?
Not really. He did say he talked about our elements. He talked about the sun and the elements, and basically he said that was basically about us going into nature and exchanging with these elements, because he said that they do have a consciousness as well, and that they can speak to us in a matter of speaking. So the sun has information, the wind has information, the water has information. And he said it's good to go and just rest in that type of nature with no thinking, you know, to the best of the ability, and just relax. Realize that there's nothing to fear, sit back, relax, and just enjoy, and kind of open yourself up to the sun's rays or open yourself up to the wind and water. So he did speak about the elements in that way as if they did have a consciousness. But, the orbs, he just kind of said the orbs are just the orbs, are just like the highest form. And we asked him what dimension they were from. He said he has no idea of what number it would be. He also spoke about these huge wave beings that would come through. Apparently there are these huge beings that are just massive, and they just flow through the universe. And sometimes they'll come through our planet with a certain energy. And a lot of times, if say that energy is the energy of anger, and if you have anger within you, it's going to strike up all these chords to kind of bring anger to you for like lessons to learn about anger. Or it could be basically anything. It could be a wave of love or a wave of, so I thought that was kind of interesting too. It seems like there's many, many beings out there that we have no idea about.
Yes, I certainly have read about there being great pools of energy, which clearly also has a consciousness. So my mind is thinking that it's something similar to that. And of course, if you attract it to yourself, and we might have done that in bygone times as a civilization, then you're going to be on the negative side, pulled down even further.
Sure. Or it seems like it comes along and it gives you the option of triggering, basically allowing you to see what you have inside of you, yet most of us aren't looking. You know, most people, it seems, you know, according to what Red was saying, that we are very tied up into our own stories, and we're very tied up into our own illnesses, that we never really see what the illness is about, or we never really, you know, we're always blaming. We're not really ever kind of looking, well, where is this coming from? Why am I experiencing this?
When often we should be saying, how have I caused it?
Right. How did this come about for me?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I can see that, absolutely. Now, he obviously spoke to you about trees, and I think most people love trees. And when he talks about the importance of them, is he presumably talking not purely on their physical presence, but something a little bit higher?
Actually, he spoke about the physical presence and what we do to trees. He said basically that trees are some of the oldest and wisest beings on the planet, and how we should really go out and sit with trees and connect with trees because they have a lot to tell us. And he said the disrespect we have for trees is terrible because the example he gave was, he said, you make things out of trees. You make houses out of trees. You make all these things out of trees, and you're not very thankful toward a tree to begin with, which, you know, is not the greatest. But he kind of slid over that. But then he said, and then you knock it down, and then you just throw it away. And he's like, it's very disgraceful. You know, it almost reminded me of what maybe the Native Americans would say, or any wise person might say. But that's basically what he said. He said that they're the wisest beings. Some of them are some of the oldest, wisest beings on Earth, and they should be respected a lot more than they are, and they should be thanked, I guess, a lot more than they are. And I do have something interesting, too, that happened recently, if you'd like to know. I don't want to break the flow of questioning.
No, that's quite all right. Carry on.
Okay. Something we did recently, which was kind of neat, and again, it was more of just for fun at this point. But I walked away and out of the space where we were having a, you know, so-called talk with Red, and he, at first, to make it more clear too, at first he couldn't hear me when I spoke. He only basically heard Betty, and spoke to Betty, and then he started hearing our voices, the others in the group. I guess basically we had to break through some consciousness barriers. Who knows? But anyway, he started hearing our physical questions, and he started answering directly from her. So I said, "Well, how about this? How about I walk away and I ask him, or I say something to him, and he's going to come back and tell you that." So that's what we did. I actually walked away, and he followed me apparently, and I walked pretty far away, and I wasn't facing the group at all, and I just said something fairly quietly out. I said, the sky is nice and blue today, you know, because I was looking right at the sky. And then we walked back, and sure enough, you know, he basically told her, the sky is nice and blue today. The exact words, I can't remember the exact sentence I used, but it was a sentence. So I thought that was kind of cool. It was like, wow, you know, I kind of believe that I felt it, but it was just a little more of a confirmation as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it seems to be a fact that a lot of the extraterrestrials do have a very strong telepathic ability, so that type of thing would be quite understandable, I think. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the dark night of the soul?
The dark night of the soul, basically what he was saying about that was that it's how we're caught in our depression, and we're caught in these like tough times, and it kind of goes back into us not looking for the lessons coming our way and being stuck. And he said, we don't have to really stay there as long as we do, but we just don't have, I guess, proper education or proper knowledge as to how to kind of let these energies move through us and let these thought systems that we have in our heads break down and start allowing some of our natural peace and love to move through us. So the dark night is just being stuck in that depression and not really being able to move forward. And he said that the majority of our people here have something similar to that, to where it's like they can't break down that barrier of, I guess, of the collective consciousness or all the social stigma, all the stories that we believe and we hold on to. It's like seems like we have to pretty much let all that go and just live very much in the present moment and allow the energies to harmoniously move through us. He said we don't. And, you know, just being stuck and not learning the lessons, not seeing the lessons is the dark night.
Right. So does he go on to give advice as to how people can overcome being sort of stuck in that low energy?
Yeah, basically he would always go back to the first thing he told us a lot was to go out in nature and exchange. Like I said previously, where he just lay down at the beach and exchange with the sand, exchange with the ocean and the air, and let yourself kind of dissolve into that. And really do that often. Go to the park, go for a walk, and any nature you could possibly get in, and let that fresh air into the home. Let the light into the home. That's a very good way of doing it. And then he said, secondly, is meditation. And it's, to me, it seemed like he meant like basically what maybe many of us think of meditation, doing that in nature. And then he said also just meditating at home. And he said most people probably would find that more practical because of our lifestyles don't really allow us to go out in nature and relax into nature. And even a lot of times when people do go into nature, they kind of want to go kayaking or go skydiving or something exciting, where what he's talking about to most people might not be that attractive, to be just kind of in nature and just being that, feeling the presence of nature and being a presence within nature. That seems to be his general teaching. He always would go back to that. He would never really, and he basically said, you know, tools are fine. Yoga is a tool. Pretty much everything and anything. All the books we read are tools. They could all be thrown away. We don't need anything external. We don't need any energy healing. We don't need any medicine. We don't need anything, you know, according to him. And I guess many teachers say this as well. We're not there. We won't let go of that. So he said, you know, tools are fine, but the best way to do it is just directly go right into nature and relax. And we would come up, people would ask, come with questions, and we would too, say, hey, well, what about mosquitoes? We're out in nature and we're getting bit. And he's like, well, that's a part of the exchange. He's like, You shouldn't look at it as you're being bitten by mosquitoes. Just relax. They're not going to really hurt you that much. And I think if you do kind of relax and let them bite you for a while, maybe eventually they'll go away, you know? Who knows?
It depends what you taste like, I suppose.
Right, right.
Yes, I agree about meditation. I do it on a regular basis. Not that regular, but I still do it. And I think it, when you can do it correctly, it quietens the mind and the body. And I think that is useful from a point of view of your health, and it gives you an opportunity also to contact other beings or your higher self. So I think that's good advice.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Now, there was an interesting chapter in your book, bearing in mind I only have the titles, and I wondered what this is about, past life injuries.
Oh, past life injuries. Basically, it came from a question. Apparently, there was a writing somewhere about if you have a freckle, that is a scar from a past life. So we asked him about that, and he said basically how past life injuries, that he said that was incorrect, and that how past life injuries work are like, say if you were in a past life and someone, you got hurt and you died of, say, stomach cancer. Mm-hmm. Basically, in this life, the energy of the stomach cancer, some of that may still be with you if you didn't clear it, and it may your stomach may be completely fine, but it might be in your hand, and now your hand is something's wrong with your hand. So basically, what he was saying was, it's the energy stays with you, not the physical illness anywhere physically on your body, and basically to always allow that energy to move through because it's just stuck energy. That's kind of what he went about saying it. That was his interpretation of illness within past lives.
Right. Funnily enough, I've read of stories where people have had, say, for example, been born with a birthmark on their cheek, and when they've had a reading and asked about that, it just happened that in a previous life they were actually shot through the cheek. And somehow that energy or that disturbance comes out in a subsequent life. So it seems to make sense that you carry something with you.
Yeah, I would agree. And I lean along the lines of there's so many possibilities that I could see a freckle or some type of birthmark being, an injury possibly from a previous life. I think maybe what he was trying to say was it's not necessarily, but he did say that was incorrect. And at the same time, another thing I would like to say personally is that he basically, when we spoke to him, he came off as that he didn't really know everything. And actually, I would say from the things that I've, heard and whatnot, I believe a very high percentage of the things that he says, but I myself don't believe, like, say, everything. That was said, and in all due respect to Red, I don't want to kind of say that he was incorrect or not correct or whatever. I think that he did, in communicating with us, I think he did the best he could. And the more I kind of, the more this experience opens to me, the more I actually appreciate what I've gone through and what he shared with us. I actually, I find myself appreciating the wisdom of him more and more. You know, so I don't want to make it sound like I'm not with him. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it's a fact that when you get teachings from higher spiritual beings, they invariably at some times say words to the effect, look, don't you necessarily believe everything I say. It's up to you to form your opinions in the end, because in reality you have everything you require within you.
Yeah, and the whole thing of even like losing your opinions and losing all your ideas, because that's the funny thing he would say to him. He'd laugh apparently when we would show up. He'd say, "You guys have more questions? Really? Come on!" He'd like kind of joke with us, which is it's kind of funny. You know, I totally understand, you know, what he means. It's like there really are no questions when you think about it, you know, or don't think about it, right?
I've always thought that when you start learning, you find that the more you learn, you realize how little you knew. And I think that brings in even more questions. I wonder if you ever really reach the end, if you know what I mean, because as these doors open to new knowledge, I think you suddenly you've got another 100 questions.
I don't know. At first we did have the questions would kind of compound on one another, but then lately and toward the end, very little. You know, it's very much like it is almost like it's almost like being in a meditation all the time and just trying to live, you know, present in the very present moment. And from speaking for myself, and this goes back even before Red, I would, you know, people would ask, well, what do you believe? And I would say, I don't believe anything. And a lot of people would have a hard time with that, you know. And I don't mean to be smart or quirky or anything like that, but what I mean by that is I only need to really believe or know what's happening right now. I don't really need to carry a story, because I think, and that's what Red would say also, that you know, we need to lose our stories in order to gain ourselves, you know. And I think a lot, and it's kind of hard, I guess, to really drop the stories of the beliefs of, well, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is all these things. I mean, we all can relate to that, I think. At the same time, it's not who we are, it's not what we do, you know. We're beyond all that. You know, and I think that's where he was always pointing to. And I think that maybe is the next step for people to start realizing we're not our stories, we're not our beliefs, we're beyond that. And we got to allow whatever that is behind there, that peace, that quietness to shine through us in order to light this place up.
Yes, that seems to tie in a bit with another chapter you had called Enjoying the Now. If you live in the now, I suppose a lot of these things you drag around with you are irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the more forgiving you become, I constantly see my thought system going in places where it's like, wow, really? I'm really thinking that? Like, how horrible. Where before it's automatic and you would just almost maybe act on this chain of thinking. So I think looking at our stories and looking at the only place we can do that is right now. We have to be aware and be present and be aware. What is happening in my head? What am I hearing? What am I thinking? And then when you see these thoughts, like, wow, that's my thought. I'm not going to accept that one. That's unacceptable. That's not who I am. You know, I think maybe that comes with the, like as Red would say, cellular memory clearing. As your cells become clearer, maybe we have less debris. But if our cells are just swamped, we're kind of caught in these patterns where we believe everything that we seem to be told, or you know, the government knows more than I do, the teachers know more than I do, the religion, you know, religions know more than I do. Your power is constantly being sifted. You know, if you and maybe power might be the wrong word, maybe your presence is constantly being sifted, and that's only happening because you're letting it, you know?
Yes. Well, I believe he had some comments to make about religion. What was his general feeling about its place in our lives?
I think he said that, you know, basically it was a tool, just like pretty much everything that we see and everything that we do is a tool for to get us to understand more and to maybe open up more. So there was nothing really, to him, it didn't seem like there was anything really wrong with anything. You know, that's why he really wouldn't go into the, like you said, the darker things of you know, conspiracies and questions like that. He would stay into the whole thing of, well, it's not really important. And religion, you know, the thing in the book, though, was a question that was asked about, he was saying something like, the time we're coming into, we won't have anything we really want. That was one of the ways he was describing, say, the shift, and maybe a byproduct of the shift was, there will be no more wanting. And you won't have any more needs. Everything will be kind of taken care of you if you allow that type of presence, or if you allow yourself to have that type of presence. And so we were going through the TV channels, and there was a TV evangelist on, and we stopped to listen real quick. And the evangelist said something like, we're now going into a time, say almost the same thing that he said. So like, wow, we gotta say this. We're going into a time of no wanting. But then he came around at the end and said, now give me your money. You know what I mean? So we went back and we said to Red, hey, you know, we saw this evangelist. Now he's saying there's no time of wanting. And then at the end of it, he's again asking for money from the people. And we even said, you know, is that serving the people who say that they need, you know, maybe someone doesn't really want to give, maybe he's giving them an opportunity to give. And I kind of forget what his reply was, but it was basically like the evangelist was probably tapping into what is actually happening, and yet he may be still a little fearful about the money, so he's kind of bringing that in. I don't think he really – and I think he kind of said that was maybe what was going on, that he was offering people which makes sense. I mean, he's offering – a space for someone to give if they feel they have to give.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, at the end of it, he always says, but, you know, basically it's meaningless, you know.
Mm. Right, yes.
Going into that, if I could make it going
into
the meaninglessness.
Carry on.
He basically said, you guys put meaning on everything and anything. He said, this is one of our downfalls, he says, that, you know, we make up stories, we assign meaning to everything, and he's like, this is not the way it goes. You know, you kind of, maybe that falls back into the whole oneness where we everything you see and everything you feel and everything that you are is interconnected, so there's no real reason to, like, say, label things. It almost seems like humanity is we worship intellect and we worship intelligence, and he's saying that is, it almost sounds like that is not the way to go, really. It's almost like you're holding yourself back by worshiping intelligence, because true intelligence or true knowledge will come to you. You're not going to find it. You know what I mean? So I thought that was kind of interesting, where he specifically said we give meaning to everything. Like, I'm sitting in my room here and I'm looking at this salt lamp I had for years, and well, salt lamp, it must mean spirituality, right? You know, and all this and that. So he's correct. You know, we do add levels of meaning to everything, and really, you know, something to look into.
Right. Now, I think my final question about the book is regarding the chapter which started off, How to Meet Light Beings. Now, I often get people that say they would like to make contact with them, and they say, well, how do I do it? So does Red actually give people advice how to make, say, telepathic contact? I mean, how does he approach that, or how would he suggest somebody approached it?
Well, he basically says that we do it all the time, we just don't know it, especially in dreaming. And when we a lot of times we'll lay down to rest and say within a fraction of a second we bounce somewhere and then bounce back without even knowing it. He says that happens to us all the time. Some of the things that he would say is, well, the whole nature thing, going out and resting in nature definitely would help that. Resting any time and maybe having the intention to go someplace, like to astral project somewhere. That's helpful. And he also said that drinking warm fluids, like warm water or some warm tea before you rest, may be helpful. There's right. some of the things that he kind of alluded to. With contacting beings. And I, in my opinion, I thought that was a little, I don't know if you want to say vague. But, you know, he basically, in all fairness, with Red, he always says there's nothing to fear. You know, just relax. You know, relax, relax, relax. And that, you know, in itself is good advice to get yourself in that astral projection frame of mind. You know, and I even posed the question of, well, is astral projection even important? And he said it's not important, but it's like a fun perk. It's a perk of being a conscious being, to where you can kind of travel through these portals, go to these different places, and open up to you know, these experiences. So it didn't seem like there's really maybe not a whole lot of value, but it's something fun to do. That's the way he explained it. It's something fun to do.
Yes. I guess part of the best advice would relate to one's power of thought. When you put out thoughts that you would like to meet one of these higher beings, you have to believe that since thought is an energy, that is going out from you. And if that is picked up and it is going to be or meant to be part of your experience, then something may occur as a result of that.
Sure. Yeah, sounds right.
Right. Now, we've got a little time left, but I don't want you to miss the opportunity of telling our listeners where they can obtain your book and any other little information you might like to give them, such as your website address. So just take a few minutes to deal with that.
Okay, yeah. The best place to check out our books is our website. It'll link you to where you need to go to get the book. Our website is nellabooks.webs.com. That's nellabooks.webs.com. So come check us out, and that'll place you to any book you'd like to check out. I don't know. I don't really have anything else to say other than I enjoyed the conversation, and hopefully people will check out the book. I think, you know, it is really good advice what he gives. You know, basically helps us find our peace, and that's the most important. And then you become a peaceful role model, and that doesn't necessarily mean doing anything other than just simply being here, being peaceful.
Right. Just a question where your books are concerned. Are you saying that they can be purchased direct from your site? And in fact, is that the only source they're available from?
Oh, no. Actually, the books, you can get them on Amazon, right. Kindle. It's the book that we're talking about is an ebook. We do have physical hard copy books, but right. Conversations with a Light Being is an ebook. Okay. So you can get that on Kindle, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble's Nook. And they both have, if you don't have Kindle or Nook, you can still read the book on your computer. You just have to download a free application for either. I would go with Kindle, but that's just my personal preference.
Right.
But the links, basically, if you go to our website, the links will link you actually to Amazon. So if you do have a Nook, you can go to Barnes & Noble and check it out.
Right. Now, a little bit earlier, you wrote a book, which I'll just ask you to make a brief comment on, A Close Encounter of the, was it 575 Kind?
Oh, that was haiku. It's a children's book. Haiku.
I see.
Yeah, it's a haiku
right.
alien book.
Oh,
I think
right.
it's called Aliens, Haikus and Aliens, Close Encounters of a 575 Kind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I just wondered whether that in any way resembled the book we've been talking about. Clearly not. And another one.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and another one that I caught my eye in your list of books was 2012, The Good News.
And here it turns out you're in it.
Yeah,
right. it's an e-book. What we did was I had this idea for a long time, and we finally started writing books, and I finally put it in motion. We contacted our favorite spiritual teachers. You know, we would read your I'm at a loss for words. Your channels. We would read your channels, and we liked you a lot, and we liked so many people. And we contacted everyone we liked, and we said, listen, there's all this bad news about 2012. How about giving us the good news? So it's a compilation of, like, say, maybe 35 people. I don't know offhand exactly how many people, but say, like, 35 or so. Mm. It's a pretty fun book. It's very diverse. It's nice. It definitely gives a nicer explanation of what 2012 is as opposed to doom and gloom.
Brilliant. I'm going to have to leave you there, Jim. It's been very interesting talking about your book with you. So thank you very much for coming onto the program.
Thank you too, Mike. Thanks for having us. Well, okay. Nell says thank you as well, I'm sure.
I beg your pardon. I called you Jim instead of Charles. Yeah, I'm already looking at my announcements for next week's guest, which is a Jim. It's Jim Hamilton, and he's the author of Visionaries Thrive in All Times. And he has a second book called Core Resonance, and he is a visionary himself. That is subject to confirmation, so I won't say any more about it, but I will issue an email to my subscribers so that you will know what is in store by Tuesday. So thank you for listening in today. I'm sure you enjoyed it, and I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.